can go ahead and get started. This won't do you know any voting activities, so which is pretty much just the approval of the meeting minutes. We can, since we do have some of you on the line, we should probably get started with the other activities for today, which were to discuss the chapters that were sent out to you guys for review. So just to reiterate, those chapters were chapter one, which is background about creation of the council and its activities that have been accomplished before the first biennial plan, and in order to create the first biennial plan. Chapter two, to cause us to reorganize some of the other chapters, but chapter two is the assessing existing need chapter. So that's looking mostly at, you know, what have national findings as well as some state findings told us about the population that we are trying to help in terms of their needs for both affordable housing as well as community-based services. And then the final chapter that I asked you guys to review is the one that we discussed at our last conference call on May 20th, which was Chapter 7, Cross-Education of State Agencies. And so I did receive comments from both Donnie and Amy, and since Amy couldn't be with us today, I'll just read off her comments. She had comments on Chapter 7, and there were two main comments that she had, so I'll go through them right now. In the recommendation on training modules, oh, did someone join?
Nick.
Hi, Nick. Great, well, we now have a quorum, so that's good. So I'll continue with this part, and then we can approve the meeting minutes. So Nick, I was just talking about comments that were submitted, written comments that were submitted about the draft chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So Amy submitted some comments about Chapter 7, Cross-Education of State Agencies. And her first comment was on the first recommendation under cross-agency education and training resources. And she was saying that we should maybe make a point in this chapter to say that the training modules that we're creating, even though we're creating them so that one state agency can educate and inform another, that we should be utilizing those same training modules for within intra-agency education. I think that intra-agency education was definitely a conversation topic that came up at the last conference call, and that was thought to be definitely necessary for our larger state agencies that may not, you know, staff may not know what's going on between, you know, within their own agency. So she was just saying that maybe we should make a bigger point of using the resources that we are proposing for state-to-state agency education for also within-agency education. Thoughts on that?
Within-agency education, you mean between agencies?
No. So there is a section in this chapter that says intra-agency communication, and that chapter was supposed to be dealing with within large agencies that we are working with. So DADS is a pretty large agency, DSHS is a pretty large agency, that one of the barriers that the committee identified at the last conference call was that sometimes staff within just DSHS, for example, may not know about a program or the administration of a program or funding stream within their own agency. And I guess Amy spoke up about that being frustrating from a local provider perspective, that there may be some intra-agency communication problems.
Well, I don't have any thoughts about that at the moment. I'm in a little bit once I have a chance to digest it.
Yeah, so at the last conference call, and those who were on the last conference call maybe can speak further on this, but we talked about both state agency to state agency opportunities as well as within a single state agency opportunities for education and information dissemination. And that's what I hope is reflected in this chapter. So Amy's comment was going to the point that perhaps the first recommendation that was supposed to be for one state agency to the next state agency could also be within a single agency, could be a good training opportunity.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't have any objection to training opportunities. I think that the thing that I'm running into is that there's kind of differences in how these things are organized from agency to agency or even within agency. You know, some of them are just RFP developers, and I'm not sure that, you know, how one works precisely with contracting staff. That's kind of a different type of person than a frontline person. You know what I mean? I don't know if TDHCA has that same kind of organizational structure.
Are you saying that there are certain persons who would benefit less from the training than others? Is that what your comment is towards?
Maybe more resistant to. That's kind of the pushback that I anticipate getting and have gotten some of, is that, you know, it's like, you know, we contract, the action is actually out there in the field with people we contract with. So.
Okay, so you're saying that the actions that are taken on certain programs are taken by contracted staff rather than DSHS staff?
Yeah, and I need to get a better fix on this, but I guess my thoughts are around. I just had some discussions with our housing opportunities for people with AIDS, and they actually use sort of not even contracting. They have apparently they work through regional administrative agencies, AAAs, and things like that. So. That's, I guess, where some of the concern is, you know, very small programs that, you know, that actually work through contractors in the field. But,
and so would those contractors then fall under our next chapter, which is on the training and assistance to local entities?
That sounds reasonable to me.
So I want to make sure that we're distinct in which groups we're identifying for which in which chapters, and I think that for those agencies who contract out program administration to the local communities, that the chapter on training and assistance to local entities is that's where the connection occurs. And this chapter would not be those contractors, not be those regional entities, but be the state agency employees.
Right. And the degree to which the state agency employee is actually involved in that, even in the contracting process, I think is relevant. But what seems, you know, as I talk about this, the most important thing to me is that this discussion just kind of occurred over the last couple of days. And I've requested some additional information from the program that I will share with the rest of the subcommittee, because if we make any conclusions on the basis of what I've been talking about and how I've articulated it, I think there's a high probability of going down the wrong road.
Do you mean, how so?
Well, I just don't think that I have enough information personally to present that in I throw it out there for some thinking, but I think that probably the best thing would be to examine how the model works with greater precision, which I hope to be able to provide to you, and then sort of figure out how that sort of model fits into this framework of who gets trained, how.
You're talking about the model of having regional agencies do the program administration.
Right.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're on the same page here.
Well, I appreciate your ability to articulate what I meant.
Okay, so that may be something that we update our Chapter 8 draft with then. We can talk more about how perhaps we need to make sure we include the regional agencies that do program administration in Chapter 8. So we can definitely look into that more. I want to get back to Chapter 7, so make sure that any comments that anyone has on that chapter, as well as Chapter 1 and 2, can be covered. The second comment that Amy had given in her written feedback was on the cross-agency utilization of information technology, and she said for recommendation 3, where we were talking about the listserv geared towards state employees, she had a comment about sending this type of listserv to contracted providers. So this is kind of a little bit off of, Nick, what you were just saying, is that she's saying that that a listserv that could be geared towards state agency employees about their fellow agencies may also be helpful for the contracted providers. I think that's probably a good insert, you know, have a sentence in that recommendation about contracted providers benefiting from this information.
Makes sense to me.
Ashley, this is Mark, and I'm sorry I missed the last meeting, but on your second one on that page about the intranet and sharing, I know it's a great idea. It just it's such a daunting recommendation, and I'm not opposed to putting it in, but you know it has a fairly low probability of success, to be honest, with linking intranets. We're just recognizing what we do within our tiny agency. I can only imagine linking intranets across all these agencies with no, you know. I don't know if you need a contractor with a pretty healthy budget or what it would take, because they all implement their intranets with different contact management systems and all this stuff. So, but I suspect you all hashed that out last time, correct?
Well, what we talked about last time, and Sherry actually brought it up, was that there was, she remembered there being an effort in the past by HHSC to try to link those state agencies that fall under the HHSC umbrella, link their intranets to one another. And she didn't know what happened to that, but there had been a push to make that happen few years back. And so I contacted Jonah Schwartz. I still have not heard back from him on that, since he is our HHSC rep. And I don't know if Nick, you have any memory of this opportunity at all, or if it even got to the point where HHSC was communicating with those umbrella organizations about this.
Well, I think we have access to each other's intranet. I'm looking at it right now.
Have access to DADs and DARs and...
Yeah, I think so. The issue gets to be is that, I mean, probably 97% of the business, probably higher, of what we do doesn't have anything to do with housing. So, and just rifling my brain, unless you're talking about housing people in state hospitals, it's not the main business for any of the health and human. So there's a lot of stuff in there that you may get housing lost in it, is what I'm saying. I don't know that linking intranets, especially given the, you know, we'd have to get buy-in from the executives across the agencies on that, which is in itself a, you know, a daunting task. I'm wondering if there couldn't be something that was housing specific that the housing programs participate in across agencies rather than just linking intranets for...
This, I don't know if you looked at the recommendation, but it was for linking, I think that maybe I miswrote it, but you're right in the fact that maybe it would be better to say, to not have housing as a piece there. I think that's probably, I understand what you're saying, but I guess what we didn't know before this, which we now know, is that HHSC organizations are linked to one another.
Correct.
Okay, and that's something that I think that we didn't understand in our previous call because we didn't have anyone that could give us a definitive answer. And do you know anything about when that happened or how that happened? Yeah.
I think it was
4 years ago, House Bill 2292.
Yeah. Okay, this is Elizabeth, and I worked for TRC, what was TRC, Texas Rehabilitation Commission, in 2002-03. And they weren't linked then, and 2292 went in 04. So I would say it was probably 05-06.
I'd be willing to bet we probably had it close to what they call transformation, which is in 2292, reorganization got off the ground in 2004.
Okay, well that changes then this recommendation and the language in it. So we can try to, I guess we do need to like maybe discuss. Because I think that what the discussion was at the last conference call was that maybe people did not take advantage of having access to other agencies' information in the like, and so therefore, you know, what is it about? Even though we do have these linked intranets, that I'm not finding out why is it that those agencies that are linked still maybe don't have the best information about one another. I guess that's like the question then, since we were making this recommendation because we thought, wow, we really want, you know, DARS and DAS to be able to know about each other. What? How can we make that happen? Oh, let's link their intranets. So if their intranets are linked, then why are we still having some of the issues of information dissemination that we're having?
Well, I think the answer is that... And this is what the council was put together to address, is that there are housing programs, you know, aside from the major concentration at TDHCA, there are programs that have been delegated to different agencies across the spectrum, some of them in HHS, some of them elsewhere, and I'm not enough of a techno wizard to think about the best way to link people on these, you know, on the internet or some other device. I think there is a virtue to having a central place and perhaps some place that pushes information out to different agencies. But a formal linkage at the agency level, I don't know that it helps people down in the programs all that much. Does it make sense?
So why is it that you think that formal linkages at the agency level won't help people in the program level?
Um, Well, I was referring specifically to an intranet linkage, and that's because it's not focused, I don't think, on housing. It's focused on the broad spectrum of core businesses that these agencies do, and the housing information is buried down within that. I think that if, and this is just off the top of my head, actually, so it's not, you know, a permanent, it's not graven in stone, and it's not DSHS, you know, policy or anything. But you still, if, even if you go to the DSHS website, if you're interested in information on HOPWA or substance abuse or whatever, you're still going to have to burrow around and down into the information, and you might get better information on the public website. I think that if we're going to focus on housing and how to network it, you know, the main portals may not be the place to do that. I think we should give some thought to at least an effort to capture that information in a place that's specific to the what we're trying to address.
Okay, I think that maybe you're just coming at it at a different angle than I think maybe we were talking about this at the last conference call, because I don't think that the goal of linking internet was just to be able to find housing information. I think it was just to have a better way of disseminating information and communicating better between agencies in general. I think it was, I think that you're talking very specifically about how would people find specific housing information within each agency, and I think that's definitely a point that we need to address. I think that maybe we just hadn't talked about it in that way last week. We were talking more how do we just at a broader level get agencies to communicate better with one another. So we can talk about, I mean, if we want to, we can talk about how more specifically we can link housing information to one another.
Actually, can I just, I was just curious, and I know, do you know of any other kind of unrelated agencies that have tried the linkage of their intranets, like, you know, say, our agency with TDHCA, and we've never really tried that, or, you know, your agency with maybe some other large agencies to pursue that and know if it worked out okay?
I don't have the institutional knowledge about that. The way that this came up was that Sherry had mentioned the effort for the HHSC umbrella agencies to link one another, and that was how this recommendation had come about, was through that example.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there has been an effort in the past for agencies that have similar missions but are seemingly unrelated in their programs.
Yeah.
Although in the end, I would say that all these programs are interrelated somehow. But I get your point.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's not a bad recommendation. It's just you want to be, you want to come across as realistic, too, recognizing that, you know, just use our two examples, your agency with ours, and getting into comfort zones with what part of the internet you want to share and all those good things, let alone the, you know, the fact that we probably use two different systems entirely to run our intranet, because I know we're just switching over. So every time someone switches to a new system, you got to worry about compatibility. And I mean, so I'm not against it. I'm just recognizing the limitations and the of, you know, any effort in that area. It's,
okay.
This is Marshall. It sounds to me like I'm hearing people saying there must be a call to have or a need to have standalone or intranet that would incorporate elements of existing ones that would be appropriate for this council and our mission. And a standalone one that combines pieces of the others. I don't even know if that's technically possible, but that's what I'm kind of hearing people say, that we need, maybe we need access to part of what the service providers do. They need access to part of what we do, but maybe not the whole thing.
Well, you know, I think this, Nick, I think that, you know, one thing is to link information, and but you don't want too much information, and that's what you're gonna get if you start at the overall entrance. So, you know, it probably will take some work, but I think if we could define what it is we want, whether it's obviously Ashley's comments, whether it goes way beyond, or it goes beyond just housing information, but defining what we want so that people can find it easier, I think Marshall may be onto something there. And I regret this, but I got to get up and talk to our commissioner. So, sorry, Ashley.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So it sounds like maybe we need to think more about this recommendation, and perhaps that recommendation number two about the linking of internets needs to be reworked into something else.
Well, actually, I'm probably influenced by the fact that, in all honesty, if you'd walk in the office and I'd share my internet with you, you wouldn't find anything, of what we're trying to address here. You find some of our policies and procedures. You find out, some of our contract management system access, kind of portal into that. And you don't find anything that would appear on a web page that would be informative as to how we provide services or kind of what we do. It's kind of like the staff directory, which, maybe that in itself would be helpful. But so I'm probably influenced by the modest intranet that we have over at this agency, plus the technological issues. But again, if it works with others, I think it would be fine. I just want to be realistic that when you start crossing agency levels, kind of common leadership, it gets daunting.
I get what you're saying, that maybe there would be another way of sharing information through the utilization of information technology that would be better suited for people being able to directly find how an agency provides its services and how its programs are administered. Do we have any recommendations or ideas at this time for what kind of what that would look like? I mean, if we're thinking of some type of centralized tool for information sharing, are there any other suggestions that we can think of that might be more helpful than the internet?
Spontaneous thoughts are dangerous, but just thinking back to what's common to all of the web page, my initial thought would be kind of a common format that could be recommended, perhaps, as maybe a distinct web page, because you can always build a web page that has a, and if the agencies kind of adapt some standardization that may help with ease of finding things, whether it's that's only my initial thought, which would be helpful, because each each agency is very creative in how it presents its information, and I know we're just about to roll out one more attempt at a web page design, and maybe that's an idea that a little bit of standardization around some of these topics.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a good idea. I mean, I think that...
Because that's easily implemented. I mean, all you'd really have to do is you would have to basically insert a new tab or something on your web page with this standardized format, and it could be kind of modest, so it wouldn't be such a daunting exercise for each agency to do. And, you know, we include things like the training materials, and then we include the kind of a, I don't know if it's a repository or a quick facts page or something like that, that would kind of have a common theme across all these agencies that are participating here. That might be a little bit more doable than linking intranets, but I'm sure there's other ideas about using IS technology across agencies, but that's the best I can do right now.
Well, I think that's a good idea. I think that it mirrors previous recommendations that we've had. Maybe having a tab on each agency's main homepage that you know, when you click on it, has the resources that a person from a fellow state agency quickly find out what they're looking for in terms of, you know, program administration or funding streams or, you know...
contact people and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if everyone's kind of familiar with the standard template, it's, you know, you can get lost in anyone's webpage, and so if it's kind of a standardized way to go to it and a way to see it, then, you know, you're just trying to find a little bit and plus the contact. I mean, I've had that experience and with other people's, you know, I guess who's the best contact person based on whatever clues I can gather, but it's not always apparent that, you know, for this program, two or three of the best contact people are. Things like that, or, you know, rather than hit the main number for the agency, which is always discouraging to people.
Right. And that. Okay, well, we can maybe substitute that recommendation in for the intranet recommendation. Well, that's great. So, are there any other comments for Chapter 7, since that's what we've been going over? I know, Donnie, I received your comments, and I had a couple of answers for them.
And I think one of the major issues you've addressed this morning that the other agencies will come in a later chapter, so you can just disregard that.
Oh, okay. What was I going to say? Oh, but I think that one thing, good thing that Donnie had mentioned in her written comments to me is on the cross-agency education and training resources section on the first recommendation, she mentioned that maybe access procedures would be more helpful than explaining the rules and regulations of a program in the training module about a specific agency program. And I think that there's a good point there, and I think that maybe we should expand upon that recommendation a bit because it is important when you're training someone and you're explaining a program to them to explain how consumers access the program, because that can be wildly different depending on the program and the agency that's administering it. So I think that we should include in the training content something about how consumers can access the program. I also was talking through this recommendation a little bit more with my fellow coworkers, and I think that maybe it would be helpful if we also said that the end goal of these state agency to state agency trainings are to to have agency staff realize the connections that they could make and the partnerships that they can make between the programs that they administer and the programs they're learning about in the training module.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that that may be a good thing to state here, because I think that that is the message that we're trying to kind of hit home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think one of the products that would be helpful, and I was glad to see your references to 211, but perhaps 211 could take the lead, since it's already in the business of providing information and referrals. If they could develop some kind of guide that wouldn't be terribly dated, but, you know, just something on finding help in Texas. If you're older or have a disability, and just kind of summarize, you know, the major programs, who's in charge. And I think that's a piece that would work potentially both for agencies to become more familiar with other programs within that agency, as well as agencies to learn about other agencies' programs. And then if the buy-in, if you can get buy-in from the administrative staff and really make a concerted effort to push that information out to the employees of that state agency, and just emphasize that that by using that information or by making that information available to consumers, they can do a better job of meeting the range of the consumer's needs and not just, you know, determine eligibility for their specific program or even their agency's program.
So do you think that maybe that are you referencing expanding on that recommendation about the partnership with the TIRN?
I think if they would be open to that, that, you know, that there's a real good fit.
Okay.
And it would probably, you know, I would hope that they would jump at a type of partnership of that nature. And I think, you know, legislators would be tickled to see, you know, the communication between agencies and the, you know, all of the state agencies that were supposed to be brought together through 2292.
Okay. And so there needs to be, like, additional language then to, on that point then, underneath that recommendation?
I think the language you've got is good, but again, I think if they're open, that they could really help compile a really useful directory that would not be limited to housing only.
Right, and I think that we want to make sure that it isn't limited. That we are saying. I mean, maybe I can add some language saying that the guide, all state agency programs that can assist the elderly and the disabled. And I can add that language. Okay. Great. Any other thoughts on this chapter?
I have none.
Okay. I think that there were pretty minimal comments on chapters 1 and 2, because they're fairly straightforward. Chapter 1 is just the background of what we've been doing, and chapter 2 is assessing existing need. And so I tried to go with data that I could collect that had been recommended to us as good quantitative data. So most of the sources here, a lot of them are national sources rather than state resources, but they get to the heart of what we're talking about in terms of the housing need and the long-term supports need. There was one comment, Donnie, that you had made was on page 3 of this needs assessment chapter, where you mentioned, what about people who qualify but are not aware of long-term services and support? This is a sizable population. And I definitely agree with you. And I was wondering if you knew of any type of data or research that I could find to back that up.
No, but I'll work on getting you some information.
Okay, great. That'd be awesome. I mean, I know that I found one data piece from the Aging Texas Well Indicator Survey about the percentage of the senior population that is aware of community supports. However, I didn't see anything about persons with disabilities because that's, you know, that's just not what they're looking at.
Yeah, and I don't think those data travel very well. I think they were polling people to see if they were familiar with their AAA.
Right.
And that's far too specific.
Okay. Yeah, well, if you have a... If you can find something or just point me in the right direction for some type of source I can use, I can put that information in.
Ashley, this is Mark. I was getting ready, and I was waiting for the call to email you. I'm a little bit familiar, and I know you all are, with the HUD's Housing Choice, which is, as they like to call it, it's the, let me do their quote, they call it the federal government's major program for assisting low-income families, elderly, and disabled. And I'm going to send you some stuff, and it might be appropriate to work that in. It's such a huge program, and it one of the nice things about it, it does have statutory caps on the percentage of anyone's income that has to be devoted to housing. So I think to be fair and paint a true picture, it might be helpful to include that program since it is so huge.
Which program are you referring to?
It used to be called Section 8, just Housing Choice.
Okay, uh-huh. Housing Choice Voucher. And so
yeah.
there's some data that you have on the way that the income structure.
Well, for instance, they cap the amount that a recipient would have to pay out of their income on housing, and it's generally 30%. And I just want to make sure that we didn't convey that some people have to pay 80 or 100% of their income of their SSI on housing, because if, unless I'm mistaken.
Well, under that program, that's a rule of that program.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the vast array of housing programs that are provided through this state agency as well as through TSHAC, those rules do not apply to all of those programs. And in terms of Section 8, it's very unique in the fact that it's administered mostly by local public housing authorities rather than by the state agency. So, even though I think that it will be, it does benefit us to have that program have those income stipulations, I think that is a very small percentage of what we do here at the state. So there still is a barrier that exists in terms of income.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure our report doesn't, even though we're trying to be persuasive, I just want to make sure it doesn't come across as painting a picture that it's not reflective of what's out there. You are in the housing agency, so I certainly understand your knowledge base there, but it did appear to be, somewhat, it didn't seem to, for instance, it didn't seem to require spending 112% of one's SSI payments on housing. That's really the paragraph I was looking at and was concerned that it was perhaps making the case to, I don't think that's common, but I could be wrong.
So you're referring to, on Chapter 2, assessing existing need, the first page.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, what this is talking about from the Technical Assistance Collaborative, mm-hmm. was that the average rental payment for someone who is a person with disabilities living on SSI, and that was the statistic that they came up with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all persons with disabilities living on SSI. That doesn't have anything to do with the type of housing subsidy they may be receiving. this is just all persons with disabilities living on SSI. The average rental payment, based on the 2008 average rental payment in the nation, a person living with on SSI would be required to spend 112% of their monthly payment on housing, just based on the average cost of housing in the United States.
Well, must have, yeah. I guess maybe it's just the way it's worded. To me, you know, it's kind of like saying to a person, if there were no government programs, they would have to pay this. But the reality is there is a system. So that's my concern, that it's misleading people to think that there is not the assistance that caps the housing cost to a much, much lower level than that. And I see what you're saying now, that if you just took the average rental payment and then you went over and looked at their SSI payment and you would do the math, but that's forgetting the fact that there's many assistance programs that have intervened and changed that payment structure.
Well,
see what I'm getting at?
I do, but I think that what we're trying to say is, and that's, I think what we're trying to say as a council for this biennial plan, that there's a large population that is not receiving assistance, either service or housing-related assistance. I mean, that's kind of the point here, is that we're establishing the need, and I think that, I mean, if you take, for example, the Section 8 program that you're referring to, waiting lists for every single public housing authority in the state of Texas are years long. Some of them, the waiting lists are closed and will not open except for one day a year, if that. So we have a tremendous amount of need and a tremendous amount of people who are not receiving any type of housing assistance. So there is a significant amount of both the national as well as the state population that don't receive housing assistance to help them subsidize the cost of their annual rent. I mean, I think that's the point here, is that we're saying that, you know, yes, we have programs available, and we will be talking about the programs we have available in other chapters of this plan, but we have to point out, though, that the existing need that is being unmet is still tremendous, which is why this council is in existence to begin with.
And I, you know, and the part you're talking about, the very next phrase is potentially making a housing subsidy a necessity for living in a community-based setting. So what she's saying is the need is, I mean, you can't live without it.
Right.
And yet people are trying to have to.
Yeah.
You know, having to try to do that. So it's true that some people are going to have some housing subsidies. They have to. I agree that I don't kind of want the raw picture out there, because that's reality for some people.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally understand what you're saying, Arthur, that we have programs to try to help the type of person who's in this situation. Yeah. I think we're just trying to present that the need exists out there.
It's far greater than the programs we have.
Right.
Yeah, and maybe with the other chapters that have come across, but, you know, the danger is when you over-dramatize the thing, and people that are policymakers are aware of the tremendous amounts being spent. You know, that's the danger I'm concerned with, that you in the desire to state need, because what you kind of explained, kind of the broader presentation, which I think maybe is a maybe you should just type up what you said today. Because that's, maybe I just didn't, pick up on the fact that you're really trying to focus on the kind of the waiting list and the unmet needs, as opposed to, because there are some that are, the needs are met, through this. It's just what you're saying is there's not enough, it available.
Yeah, the need's greater than the availability. We sort of say that at the top of that page, but, you know, we can flesh that paragraph out more and sort of put that in, and also in that paragraph.
Maybe I know it's got a limitation on pages. It just kind of struck me, because I little knowledge is a dangerous thing. I just knew there were some programs that certainly didn't require that level of income devoted to your housing. But I see what you're doing now.
I don't know when I first came here, one of the things that I learned that was startling to me was as much as we do, it's still such a small fraction of the need. I don't even remember what the figure is now. With the stimulus money, it increased, but it was only like 3%.
I was about to say 2 or 3% of the need, yeah.
Of all the states.
Right. Yeah.
And so it looks like we're doing a lot if you look at the money we're spending, but if you look at that compared to the need, it's a drop in the bucket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that we can just maybe make that statement a little bit more clearly at the beginning of the chapter is that there is an array of programs designed to meet the needs of this specific population. However, the total need is greater than the availability of these programs. And we can certainly make sure that we make that point in that first opening paragraph of the chapter.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Are there any other thoughts on the chapter one or chapter two that I submitted to you guys? Okay. Well, I mean, I think that we covered all the written comments that I received, and if anyone has any additional written comments on these three chapters, please do submit them to me, and I will. Update these drafts given the conversations we've had today as well as the written comments received. Because Nick left, I don't believe we have quorum, and so I don't think we can approve our May 20th meeting minutes, so we'll have to put that on the next agenda. And so in terms of next steps, we have our next conference call for this committee on June 17th, so same time, 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, June 17th. And in terms of where we go from here, staff is trying to kind of write as seriously as possible to get these chapters done. And I'm hoping that we can review the identifying barriers chapter. As that is written, it's just being reviewed currently. So hopefully we'll be able to, and that's a substantial chapter too. It's one of the big ones. So hopefully we can have that one for our next meeting to review. And one outstanding piece of this whole plan that neither committee has yet discussed is performance, evaluating the performance of the council itself, because that's actually one of our statutorily required duties, is to create some type of performance measures to assess our success. That'll be interesting, but we can certainly, I think, have that discussion or start to have that discussion at our next meeting, because it is a required piece for the plan. So was any other outstanding thoughts, questions, concerns?
No, I have none.
Hello?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will talk to you on the 17th then.
Okay, no.
Thanks, Laura. Bye.
Bye.